El siguiente es un programa pagado por el anunciante y 1600 AM no se hace responsable por las opiniones reflejadas en su contenido.
This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
Welcome back. This is All Things Armenian. I'm your host, Professor Barlow Demirgardichian with the Armenian Studies Program at Fresno State. It's been a busy few weeks for our program. We've been having activities over the last few days, which we're going to talk about today. But I want to, first of all, tell you about our upcoming events. On Thursday, March the 5th, 2020, at 7:30 p.m., Dr. Ari Shakarian is going to be speaking. It's his second lecture as part of his three-part lecture series, and it's called The Survivors, Armenian Orphans and Refugees After the First World War. And that's going to be in the University Business Center at Fresno State. It's a free lecture. Everyone is welcome to attend. And, you know, it's going to be a really good lecture because he gave a good talk on his first one, and I think it's a good one for his second one as well. On Tuesday, March the 10th, Dr. David Gutman is going to be speaking on Sojourners, Smugglers, and Dubious Citizens, the Politics of Armenian Migration to North America, 1885 to 1915. And Dr. Gutman is coming to Fresno State from Manhattanville College in New York. And his talk is going to be one about how the Armenian immigrants, really from that very first period, came to the United States from Turkey and the politics involved in that. And then finally, on Wednesday, March 18th, our special guest will be Dr. Huri Berberian. She's the Mehruni Family Presidential Chair in Armenian Studies at the University of California, Irvine, and she'll be speaking about her latest book called Roving Revolutionaries, Armenians, and the Connected Revolutions in the Russian, Iranian, and Ottoman Worlds. That's just some of our upcoming events. As I was saying, we had a very busy weekend at Fresno State. We had two events. Friday night, there was a concert by Nara Avetisyan, which was part of the keyboard concert series at Fresno State, part of the Young Talent series. But actually yesterday, Saturday, we had an all-day event, or most of the afternoon, called Armenian American Musical Heritage of the San Joaquin Valley. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that and about some of the musical projects of the Fresno State Armenian Studies Program. And I'm happy to have with me today as my guest, Dr. Yektan Turkyilmaz. Welcome, Yektan.
Hi, Balu.
It's good to have you here today. Just a little bit about Dr. Turkyilmaz. He is actually living in Berlin, Germany, where he is a research fellow at the Forum Transregional Studien. And he received his PhD from Duke University on the topic of the Armenians and rethinking the genocide, but from the perspective of the Eastern Anatolia. And he has also received his PhD from the Department of Cultural Anthropology, as I said, at Duke University, and he's taught courses throughout the world. But the purpose that he's here now is he's been in Fresno for now almost 2 weeks, working on a project that the Armenian Studies Program has been working on, which is really about Armenian-American music. So, Yektan, thank you again for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've been doing, about this topic, I think, is what I want to start with. Tell me a little bit about the topic of Armenian-American music, especially in records.
Thank you very much for having me. This is a topic which I've been very much interested for by now decades, the topic being the history of sound recording, especially commercial recordings, which by and large goes back to the turn of the century, or, you know, late 1890s, and if we think about, like, you know, the world in general, around the turn of the century, 1900s. And my interest is not limited to the immigrant musicians recordings in the United States, I basically look at the history of recording industry in the Eastern Mediterranean. That is the Ottoman Empire, Greece, Egypt, Levant, that is Beirut, Lebanon and Syria. And my focus there is like, you know, what it did to cultures, identities, what it did politically, basically its consequences. And another group that I look at closely is the diaspora communities. That is the diasporas of these areas. Let's say the Greek diaspora in United States, Armenian diaspora in United States or elsewhere, in France, in Uruguay. So, but in all these diasporas, if we are to talk specifically about Armenians, the most important location of music production in the diaspora was definitely the United States. Going back to early 1900s, first the earliest recordings appeared in mainstream labels like Victor and Columbia. Then, as of 1920s, Armenians, like many other ethnic groups, began to create their own labels, which actually had important consequences, in the sense that, unlike those mainstream companies, this time music was being recorded by those people who knew about the music, who knew about the history, who knew about the taste of the audience.
Where did your interest come about? I mean, before we talk specifically about Armenian music, you said what a broad interest you have. You're a cultural anthropologist, but did this come out of your studies or something you just had as a personal background?
Actually, as you summarized, my PhD dissertation is on the Armenian genocide. So my specialization is collective violence. But I had a personal interest, personal liking, so to speak, for the records. My personal story goes back to early days of my childhood, when my father was a medical doctor in the countryside of Eastern Anatolia, Sebastia, Sivas. And one day, some guy sells him this gramophone. And at the time, there was no power in the in the district that we lived, and for a kid 6-7 years old, that's the most fantastic toy that he or she can ever have. You crank it up, you put some discs on it, and it produces sound. That's a fantastic toy for a 6 year old. Mm-hmm. So that it goes back to then, but I think the idea of turning this into a scholarly project goes back to year 2000, when I started my PhD at Duke University. At the time, it was the time that I realized that other than the recordings in the Ottoman Empire, in Greece or elsewhere in the Middle East, there were also recordings done by musicians from those areas in the United States, which basically kind of, on the one hand, it was a big surprise to me, and on the other hand, it also broadened and further persuaded me to definitely turn this into a project. And actually, recently we had two workshops on the topic, not specifically on Armenians, but on the history of recording in the Middle East, in the Eastern Mediterranean area, and its consequences in Berlin, and actually. These are kind of like what I'm doing here, and what I'm doing in Berlin are kind of like these are two sister projects going hand in hand.
Well, you mentioned sound recordings in the Eastern Mediterranean and in that region. Was it actually Armenians that were among the first to bring that into the area, or who was it that actually, and maybe you can just even back it up and say, just take us to the beginning of sound recordings and then kind of make that, how did it actually get transferred or transmitted?
Balo, that's a beautiful question. In the sense that that Armenians were such a key group, not only in the industry, but also in music production in general, in the region. First of all, you know, if you look at, like, you know, what people call today Ottoman classical music, or Ottoman music scene in general, not only classical, if there is one group which was definitely overrepresented in the music scene, that was obviously Armenians. You know, Armenians were were among the most prominent composers. The best known, you know, I can count many names if you go back to, like, you know, to if you look at the history of music, but also history of recording, you see, like, you know, Armenians are definitely overrepresented. And this was the case until the genocide, for sure, 1915. Over time, of course, like, you know, as the Armenian population dwindled in the Middle East because of the massacres, the genocide, first the massacres in 1890s, then the genocide, and then also the immigration. So this changed. But if you look at the history of music production in those areas, Armenians were music educators, Armenians were music composers, Armenians were instrumentalists, Armenians were vocals, and Armenians were, you know, beyond and above all, they were not only in music, but in general, in the realm of entertainment, they were definitely overrepresented, including theater, cinema. And this is not only true for, by the way, for the Ottoman Empire. This also applies to the music scene in Egypt, and also Lebanon, I would say. And in those areas, actually, this situation continued further into, like, you know, 1920s, 1930s. Yes, definitely Armenians were both as business people, as musicians, very notable in this entire process.
Actually, I think about it because I also know that the role that Armenians played in photography,
exactly,
in the same area,
exactly,
in the printing, in,
exactly,
in many areas that, you know, there was, they were among the pioneers in each of these areas, and they have made a big impact in each of those areas.
That is so correct, Barlow. Actually, photography is a good example. I think printing press is a great example, in the sense that, you know, probably many of our listeners would know, as at least the Armenian listeners would know, you know, that, like, the first Armenian book was not published in the areas where Armenians made, like, you know, had a sizable population, right?
Right.
It was not in Ottoman Empire. It was not in the Russian Empire, but it was in Venice in 1512. And if you look at, like, in the first Bible, it was published in Amsterdam, and the first periodical in Madras, late 1800,
right,
18th century,
right,
1700s. So actually, that was also correct. That was also it was a similar picture. If you look at Armenian recording industry, Armenians in the recording industry, you know, the first Armenian recordings were not done in the Ottoman Empire. They were not done in today's Armenia. They were not even done in the Caucasus, where Armenians had a sizable population. But it was done in St. Petersburg in 1901. And likewise, if you look at the Armenian recordings over the, let's say, the first half of the 20th century, it's so dispersed. You know, Armenians did recordings, we already mentioned the United States, but in France, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Uruguay, in Argentina, in Egypt, and in Germany. You know, I can keep telling you the, you know, increase the list. So you are right in the sense that, like, you know, that Armenian music recording, Armenians in the on records, is actually very similar to Armenians on pages. That is, in the printing press. It's a very similar history. And it's not a coincidence, because Armenian cultural production has always been a global enterprise. We get a similar picture if you look at the recording industry.
Well, Yektan was the Kazan visiting professor in Armenian studies 2 years ago. And I was just looking at it. It was almost 2 years ago to the day, it was actually on March 7th, 2 years ago, that he gave a lecture on Armenians on Records, music production from homeland to diasporas. And that was kind of the impetus for sort of a confluence of events, I will say, or confluence of things, which was that the Armenian Studies Program, already had a collection of Armenian records, which we had collected over the years. And then Yektan happened to come, not happened to, but he came and gave a talk about this. And the result of that was two grants that the Armenian Studies Program has received. And the first is the broader one that we'll talk about first, which was the Grammy grant, which is the Grammy Museum has given a grant to Armenian Studies to catalog and to organize its record collection. And so that's kind of why we've brought actually Yektan back for 2 weeks. So tell us a little bit about, again, you started, you said the first recordings were in 1901. According to your research, what was the first recording done in the United States and what was it?
When we talk about recordings, we can talk about two, you know, very broadly speaking, can talk about two categories: non-commercial recordings and commercial recordings. So non-commercial recordings go back to 1893 to the Chicago Fair, when not only Armenians but many other groups were recorded. Those were the early days of
that. Was music also?
Yes, there was music. And recordings in the United States. Commercial recordings, we are talking about 1907 and afterwards. And also, Armenians recorded, not only in, by the way, they did not record only in Armenian language. They sang in, they recorded, they made recordings in Turkish, in French, in Persian, in Azeri language, in Arabic. So, Armenian musicians were not active only in the Armenian music scene with the narrow meaning of the term, but they were active in a broader, music scene. Regarding our collection, I would like to add a couple of words, if you allow me. First of all, you definitely deserve the credit here, because if you look at if you think about 1980s, 1990s, when you were collecting these records, no one were interested in these 78s recorded in the United States, and people were throwing away, and you were the one who convinced many Armenian families not to throw them away but to donate them to the Armenian Studies Program. And this was not easy task, because keeping this these are bulky items and they need to be preserved well, because they are very fragile and they are heavy to carry around, so many things. So you definitely deserve you basically saved an important cultural heritage media from pretty much disappearing, vanishing. That's and second thing, I think. There is another hero whose name we have not mentioned so far, Jim Karagözyan, who did not only help us preserve this for many years, but also generously shared his own collection, which included many home cut records. Home cut records being those records pressed at home, recorded at home after 1940s, specifically after the Second World War, and which actually allows us to hear the voices which could not make it to recording, right? Commercial recordings, and also those recordings actually reflect how vivid, how lively the music, Armenian music scene has been in Fresno, particularly in the Valley area in general.
Yeah, this is a topic that we're going to continue. We're going to take a break and listen to some music from the movie Ararat. And then when we return, we'll talk more with our guest, Dr. Yektan Türkyılmaz.
Thank you. Tune into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome back to All Things Armenian. I'm your host, Professor Barlow Demirgerdichian. We heard two pieces from the Ararat movie CD. Ararat movie was Adam Yagoyan's movie that discussed and talked about the Armenian genocide. And we listened to two pieces, Something in Your Heart and Ancient History. My guest today is Dr. Yektan Türkyılmaz. And we were talking about the sound production and music and about actually records, which was the focus of an event that was held yesterday at Fresno State. And so the event was called the Armenian American Musical Heritage of the San Joaquin Valley. And we invited people from the community to come out to Fresno State and bring with them all different kinds of materials related to Armenian sound production. And that included things like playbills, included sheet music, and included more records, a lot of different things. And what's happening is that's going to kind of be put together and put together eventually, hopefully, into this archive of Armenian sound recordings. But Yektan, yesterday you kind of led a discussion with one of the foremost oud players in the United States, Richard Hagopian, who's, of course, a local person, musician. And you had a conversation where we listened to music, but also talked a little bit about the history of Armenian sound production in America. So can you give us an overview of that discussion? Because I think you broke it up into kind of four or five parts. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about each of the sections, how you kind of conceptualize the idea of Armenian-American music.
Yes, Richard Hagopian, Richard Hagopian, or oud master Richard Hagopian, is a very unique person from many respects. First of all, he has an amazing, he has a very, let's say, interesting music career, very rich actually, and all over the United States. And second thing, he's always been a very curious person, which makes a big difference. He did not just ignore what was happening around him, but he was curious. So he recorded everything, and on top of this, he has an incredible memory. He remembers everything in great detail. So so his input to our project has been enormous, very weighty. And this time during my 2 weeks stay, I made two interviews with him on this topic again. So as you described, our project is not only about 78 RPM discs anymore. It is also about the entire social life around these discs. Who were these musicians? And where did they play? And what did they play? And how did what they played change over time? These are all topics. And how, in what ways they reach out to other sections of the Fresno community, like non-Armenians, vice versa. These are all important topics of interest to us in this the project. So we are not the as a final product, we will not only have a collection of 78 RPM discs, but also visual material, also other oral history material. We will also have hopefully video material. So and this should be also a request from the community that whoever has such material can either donate to the program or allow us to digitally copy those, which is one of the things we did yesterday. And the way I organized it, I tried to organize it, is to see, first of all, who are, to give an idea to the audience, who these people are and why they came to United States. Not all Armenians came to United States because of the genocide. Of course, genocide was a major reason, but that was not the only reason. Actually, American presence in the United States goes further back than the genocide. And second thing, not all these musicians were professional musicians in the sense that we understand professionalism in music. They were not trained, or they were not, you know, widely known musicians. Many of them, some were, but many of them were not. And that was one topic. Another topic was to make the audience understand what was the difference about, what was so different about Fresno. You know, Armenian communities, Armenian immigrant communities did not exist only in Fresno. But there was something different about Fresno, and that difference, I think, continues to exist, which is, you know, if you look at most other areas that where Armenians settled when they came from Ottoman Empire and elsewhere, they're mostly urban settings, right? You know, in the East Coast, the earliest ones, and other places too. And yet, you know, in the case of Fresno, the people, Armenians, mostly came from the rural parts of the Ottoman Empire, and they settled in rural part of United States, and they continued to be farmers, right? And I think this makes a big difference. A group being an urban group or a rural group makes a big difference in the way, I mean, they approached everything, including aesthetics, arts, and music. And second thing, which is true for many other places as well, but especially true for Fresno, is kind of like, you know, that it brought together immigrants from different parts of Ottoman Armenia, different parts of Armenian communities over the world, actually, which enabled, so immigration enabled a new kind of contact among Armenians, which was not as much possible in their homelands, right? And this also facilitated or kind of paved the way for emergence of new forms, new sounds, Armenian sounds, new forms in Armenian music production in the United States.
Well, I think you touched on it, because Fresno was actually the first major Armenian community in California, in the Western United States. So if we think that begins in the 1880s and then all the way until World War One, let's say from 1881 to 1914, we probably had over 20,000 Armenians. And I think what you said about the immigrant part is very important, that we'd sometimes forget it, but the San Joaquin Valley became a place where immigrants from all the different villages, towns, regions came together, each bringing their own music and their own regional culture. And then, because they're now in an American setting, they create this new type of music. Now, in your discussion with Richard, Richard is an important figure because of how long he's lived here and how that kind of bridges the gap from that early period to today. But a question that I have, and it's one that of course is probably asked a lot, but I'd like you to maybe spend a little bit of time on it, is just the question of the origins of the music that was first played here in the San Joaquin Valley. I'm talking about Armenian music. We call it Armenian music. But can you break it down to the extent you can because people want to put things in categories, and I don't think that's good, but can you tell us a little bit? And I'm talking about, okay, music was Turkish influence, the lyrics were Armenian. How did that all work out? What's your findings on that?
I mean, when we talk about Armenian music or Armenian culture in general, I think a useful term would be rhizomatic, which means it doesn't have one root. It has got multiple roots, many roots. And these roots do not necessarily, I mean, might sometimes, like, you know, seem as contradictory, but actually there is a product that we can call Armenian music, but one shouldn't expect it to be, you know, purely Armenian. And I don't think there is any culture, you know, any pure culture anyway. We need to get rid of that idea that we can have pure, well-protected cultural traits, music, artistic.
Maybe if you lived in a rainforest in Brazil, that would be it. But that's about it. Somewhere so remote that you never had contact, right?
Yeah, and also, like, you know, think about it. I mean, it would be quote-unquote, an insult to the Armenian experience. I mean, Armenians have lived as a diasporic and a global community for, you know, millennia, for, you know, many centuries. I mean, how come they wouldn't have contact with other groups? You know, and I mean, that's kind of like, it also belittles the Armenian versatility, or like, you know, adaptability, like, you know, because Armenians are known as a, like, you know, group who kind of perfected the art of living as a group, diaspora community.
But I think you used the word adaptation. I like that word, because the way I see it is that Armenians have always interacted, as you said, and we can go back to whatever period we want to, but you can take the Crusader period, for instance. So they interacted, they adapted, they learned, they also gave back, but then they also brought into their own culture those parts of art or music or cuisine, and made it what we call Armenian. So it's actually a living culture in that way. It's not a museum piece that you say, well, that's the museum, and there's never change. But actually, it's living, and it actually has enriched the culture.
I mean, you're making such an important point, Barlo, in the sense that, you know, first of all, you know, when we talk about Armenian music, I think we are talking about something which we can never perfectly, you know, describe
or categorize.
Yeah. You know, because it's in such a, like, it's in flux. It's living. It's like, you know, continuing. You know, it's changing, which is, I think, you know, which is the, you know, which is what you would expect. And second thing, it also reminds me of the fact that, I mean, we talked about Armenian music production back in the Ottoman Empire elsewhere. And interestingly, Armenians were more active in the Ottoman music scene than they were in the Armenian music scene.
And the Ottoman scene was in Turkish and playing Ottoman music.
So I mean, then, you know, then it's like, you know, urges us to question these categories. What is the Ottoman music? You know, is it Turkish? You know, or likewise, you know, how can we really ignore the influence of this heavy Armenian presence in the Ottoman music scenes on the Armenian music itself? Impossible. So, yes.
And you've been researching the Armenian music in many communities in the United States. But again, coming back to our program yesterday with Richard, when you talk about the early musical scene, tell us a little bit about what that was. In other words, was it one group, let's say Erzurumsis, Bitlisis, and it would be musicians from purely that group that would form a band and play only their music? Or did they borrow from other musicians and then form the new music? Tell us a little bit. Give us an example or two,
you know,
of some process.
At least the first, you know, until the Second World War, even if even further, like, you know, until, like, you know, we can say until 1960s, the Armenian musicians produced music, made music with, you know, non-Armenians very often. So the music scene itself was quite multi-ethnic, and it brought together Greeks, Assyrians, Arabs, some Turks, and Armenians, all the groups which share similar music systems. The idea of, like, the notion of makam, the halftones, and then and also, I think important was that, like, you know, that there was also, to some extent, the influence of the importance of the importance of Turkish for the first, at least first generation, being the lingua franca. So these people, they all had, like, you know, these people from different groups had their own language, but on top of that, most of them could speak one dialect or some form of Turkish coming from, at, you know, from the Ottoman Empire. But this would, you know, and if you look at, like, you know, the kind of recordings they did, it was quite colorful. As I said before, they sang in many languages, but even, like, you know, the Armenian music, if you look at Armenian Armenian language music or Armenian music, I mean, you see very different genres, including like, you know, classical Western style, classical music, like Gomida style, let's say. And you see the influence of that, definitely. You also see the continuation of this Ottoman urban or court music, or the classical Ottoman music, you know, sometimes sang in with Armenian language lyrics, Armenian lyrics. But I think really important here, what's really specific, where is what made United States recordings unique, is that, like, you know, you have like, you know, two forms, which two styles, two genres, which did not, which could not make it to recording in the Ottoman Empire, for instance. One is the popular songs. The second is folk songs from the from the provinces, because the Ottoman music recording was done mostly by urban Armenians for an urban audience. But here, the audience would be different. It is now blue collar, working class, or in the case of Fresno, farmers, and so the market was shaped by their interest, by their taste. Yeah. So
Yeah, so we're gonna come back in a moment. My guest is Dr. Yektan Turkyomaz. We're simply discussing Armenian musical production, sound production, record production, and we'll be back after a short break, and we'll be back to all things Armenian.
Tune into All Things Armenian, presented by the Armenian Studies Program at California State University, Fresno. Enjoy in-depth conversation on the Armenian culture and learn everything going on in the valley within the Armenian community. Listen every Sunday at 2 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome back to All Things Armenian. I'm your host, Professor Barlow Demirgadichian. My guest today is Dr. Yektan Türkyılmaz, who's here from Germany. He's been here for about 2 weeks, and he's been working on a project dealing with Armenian sound production here in the San Joaquin Valley, working with the record collection of the Armenian Studies Program. Welcome once again, Yektan. We've been discussing quite a variety of just really interesting topics dealing with the sound recordings. On Saturday, we had an event which was called the Armenian American Musical Heritage of the San Joaquin Valley, and he and Richard Hagopian were together in a discussion musical performance which kind of looked at the history of Armenian musical production here in the San Joaquin Valley. And Yektan, it was a very interesting presentation. As you said, Richard really has he's kind of a node, if you will. He's kind of a place that's connected to a lot of people. Tell us a little bit more about what you've been able to discover from him in terms of his knowledge that's been helpful to your project.
First of all, this is a topic in scholarship which has recently started receiving attention. So, and therefore, we lack so much information about who these people are, where they did the recordings, the circulation, where they were played, and what other activities these musicians were involved in, and their connections to the communities. So these are all unknowns. And, Richard's input is invaluable in the sense that he gives an everyday account of what was happening. It's not an encyclopedic or cold description of what was happening, but it's rather a thick and warm description of the everyday, who these people were in everyday life, and including, their background, how their families, how they got into music production. And
some very funny things he mentioned, especially about how much musicians were paid, how little. Of course, it probably was good for the period, but the hierarchy, which musical instruments, which musicians were paid more. Yeah. And so, as you said, if you looked at it from a historical perspective, it would be like a people's history or a micro history of a community, because he takes it into such depth, and his recall and his ideas about it are so interesting. And you are a cultural anthropologist, so this actually fits into your discipline. Sure. And as you said, it ties in also with something you like or love, as it's got both parts
exactly.
to it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So one of the things we learned about at the presentation was that Richard Hagopian had a teacher, probably his main teacher, from whom he learned his musical background at a very young age. 9 years old, was he?
Yeah.
Richard was 9 years old. Nine, 10, yeah. And this person was Kanuni Garbis Bakırcan. We're going to play in a moment a short excerpt of an original recording. So tell us the background of that, Yektan.
Kanuni Garbis Bakırcan is one of the few musicians who were already well established in the Ottoman Empire before coming to the U.S. And he was one of the court musicians, actually. He had, the Sultan's insignia. Richard Hagopian has a photograph of.
That's right.
And he was he was born in Izmir, which is Western Turkey. So it is kind of he is not Bakırcan, Kanuni Garbis Bakırcan is more the urban type, classical Ottoman, music making Armenian musician.
So we're going to listen to an excerpt, but tell us the background of it.
Kanuni Garbis actually created his own label in New York City in 1920s, Stumble. It's not Istanbul without an I. It's a Stumble record. And this is perhaps the only, his only Armenian language recording, because the rest of the records he released under this label is they're all Turkish, and he would later actually record also for after 1940s for Balkan label, but these recordings are rather earlier ones, 1920s.
We're going to listen to about 30 to 45 seconds of this excerpt, and then I'm going to ask you, Yektan, to tell us what types of information you draw from this music when you hear it, about a melody, about language, about all of these things. So we're going to hear an excerpt from Kanuni Garbis Bakurjan, an early Armenian or Ottoman musician. Let's listen to it, and then we'll talk about it. So that was an excerpt from Kanuni Garbis Bakurjan, Ah Imanushyar. So tell us a little bit about what you found so fascinating about this, other than, of course, it's early, but just tell us what you think.
First of all, these recordings, there is you know, in many ways you can use or you can approach this material. One is to see what's like, you know, happening in the music technically. And if you can also, like, you know, take a sociological point of view and try to understand, you know, how the life Armenian American immigrant life was represented in these, because, you know, these are, like, you know, as I mentioned before, I mean, what changed in the United States is that, like, you know, that people, one of the things that changed in the United States in the recordings is that people could more easily talk about everyday life. If you look at these recordings, you will see the concerns about, for example, this one, Ah im anushyaris into heratar into ins togur togur moratar. Yeah, it's about, like, you know, a loved one lost far away. I mean, this is exactly, you would keep finding, you know, you will see this theme coming back and again, loss, the idea of loss. Right? And oftentimes this loss was not only, I mean, it was kind of an allegorical loss, you know, it mm-hmm. kind of, like, you know, was not only the beloved one, but loss of everything, especially if you put in the context of, like, you know, this, that like, these are all post-genocide music production, it is kind of like, you know, story of a bigger loss. And likewise, you know, you see recordings about changing gender relationships, you know, you see recordings about changing cultural traits, you see recordings about the life in the factory, you see recordings about expectations, hope, and you see also recordings about the pain, the continue, I mean, the deep trauma, the deep pain, not only about, like, you know, what happened to, like, you know, Armenians in the Ottoman Empire, but also about their everyday life, because it was a difficult life, it was not an easy life, they were at the very margins of the American society at the time, by all means, you know, linguistically, culturally, economically.
Well, very interesting you mentioned about the loss and the pain. And I think this goes back to a conversation we had a while back, but I think you found only one or two recordings that directly deal with the genocide. Is that right? And maybe why do you think that is? And
that was such a frustration for me because, you know, as I said before, by 2000, I realized that there is a huge volume of recordings done in the United States. And at the time, my research was on the genocide, and I was very excited, hoping that I would find a whole lot of material on the topic, on the subject, because, you know, yes, in the Ottoman Empire, in Turkey, they couldn't tell these stories. Or even if they told those stories, they couldn't make, those stories could not make it to the public because of political reasons, as all our listeners could imagine. But I was assuming that here, they have the means, they have the freedom, and after 20 years, I found only two. At the time, it was two. Later, after that, after that lecture, I found another one. Total of three. Two of them in Turkish, only one in Armenian, and the other sides are, you know, ironically, or you know, it might sound paradoxical, was very cheerful songs, by the way. You know, like either like, you know, drinking table, like, you know, that's bar, that type, like, you know, the entertainment songs. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a rule, like, you know, for all those three recordings, like the same story. One side is like, you know, let's say the story of the forced deportations, the massacres, the genocide in general, and the other side either of let's say a good and, you know, joyful time or a love affair. You know, and it, I mean, it, this kind of like, you know, it was mind-boggling for me for a long while. And of course, you deeper go into like, you know, to the everyday lives, or if you go deeper into like, you know, if you try to like, you know, put yourself in their shoes, these people, as of 1915, after the genocide, they had nowhere to return. I mean, you know, they became a diaspora without a homeland, right? And so, And the life here was already tough enough, difficult enough. So they were kind of struggling to be successful. They didn't, they could not afford to recollect that past. They were, instead of those, you know, narratives on the genocide, you see lots of records about Armenian heroism recorded in the time. I think that reflects that.
Yeah, this is one interview that we could go on and happily go on for more, but we're coming towards the end of our show today. And I want to thank my guest, Dr. Yektan Türkyamaz. Thank you very much for joining me today. And when you come back again, we're definitely going to have you on the radio again, because this is such a fascinating topic, and the work that he's doing is really very, very good. Just want to remind you about some of our upcoming events at the Armenian Studies Program. Coming up on Friday, April the 17th, so just a little bit further on, will be the Fresno film premiere of What Will Become of Us, a film by Stephanie Ayanian, which features, again, Richard Hagopian and his grandson, Andrew Hagopian. And also on March 22nd will be the 32nd annual banquet of the Armenian Studies Program. So lots of activities. Check us out on Facebook or on our website at FresnoState.edu, Armenian Studies, and we'll see you next week on All Things Armenian.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Este fue un programa pagado y solo refleja la opinión de sus anunciantes. Ahora continúa disfrutando de la programación de 1600 AM.